Session number 26589, Hugh Grant Dalton, Reel 3.
50 Squadron Fem at Swinderby on the 13th of February 1942. Following on that, we went to Central Flying School, Upperhaven, to do a short pilot's instructor's course.
Where you were teaching?
I was going to
be an instructor.
Yeah. But I went to, as I say, to a short course at Upavon from the 14th of February to the 14th of March, 42. I think the full course used to be 2 months or something. Then I went to a 16 OTU Upper Hayford on the 15th of March, instructing first of all and demonstrating on Hamdens. And until 3rd of August of 42. Now, while I was at Upper Hayford there, as I say, I was instructing on Hamdens, and we switched over to Wellington 1Cs, which nobody liked.
Why was that?
Well, the Hamdens much better airplane.
Than the Wellington?
They were clapped out old ones.
1Cs were clapped out old ones.
1Cs, yes. But while I used to do demonstrations down here in the logbook. Or a Czech demonstration, occasional air test. And then the first Wellington IC I flew was on March the 27th. So it was only a couple of weeks or so after I got there.
Did you not have to do any sort of conversion training?
Not at Wellington.
Hmm. Or not? It being another...
I did some dual, I see. Learned to fly it. Just one... No, two sessions, I think. That's all.
But because you're quite an experienced pilot with many... Yeah. With 197 hours, I think we discovered.
Well, there were 600 hours altogether by the time I got to Upper Hayford there instructing.
You'd done 600 hours by the time you got to Upper, yeah. of which a third had been operational.
200 or so was operational, yeah.
So, therefore, what I'm trying to glean is that to move from one aircraft type to another with a pilot of your considerable experience, two shots at it would be sufficient.
Yeah. They weren't very complicated airplanes in those days. They were comparatively simple. Well, not like nowadays. You want to learn all sorts of systems. Fly-by-wire and whatnot.
Yes.
Which is beyond me now, still. Yes, Wellington's just ordinary instructing, local flying, various details, until we come to first 2,000 bomber raids. Yes, there's nothing much there, just... Local flying demonstrations.
So you were passing at the moment through the weeks and months of mid-1942?
Instructing.
The instructing.
All the usual things.
Did you find that agreeable, enjoyable, a bore?
Bit boring. Frustrating sometimes.
Why was that?
Well, we wanted to go back to squadron again.
You did?
Yeah. Okay, occasionally I used to go the odd flight back. If we could scrounge an aircraft, go back to the squadron. I was a flight lieutenant at that time.
A what?
Flight lieutenant.
Right. So in the it's exactly 2 years you've gone from pilot officer to flight lieutenant.
Yeah.
Yes.
I was flight lieutenant at 50. Actually, I was promoted. When was it? October, I think, 1941. Acting, right? Most ranks were acting at that stage.
But extra pay?
Oh, pay. Oh, yes, very much so. Appropriate pay.
Can you remember what it was?
I'm not going to say that. No. Mind you, I've still got my old... I don't think I'm about to throw them away. I've still got my old bank balances from that period.
They're historical Thanks. Documents in themselves. Goodness me.
Now, having a sort out the other... Just recently... thought, really, I can't keep these. No good for anybody else. Throw them away. Anyway, May 30th, Operations Cologne, 1,000 bomber raid. That was quite an eye opener, what could be done. Clear sky over the target, I remember.
First, a clear sky over the target.
Yes, it was Cologne. It was a, really showed what could be done. I think it was very successful.
As you were an instructor, was it the case then that the 1,000 bomber raid that every available pilot, I mean, would it be an exaggeration to say that every qualified pilot was put into every serviceable aircraft?
They got as many aircraft out as they could, crewed by either instructor crews or the most experienced trainees who were just about to go to squadron, as far as I can remember. What the chop rate was, how many they lost on that, I can't remember now. But I didn't compare, comparatively speaking, it wasn't outrageous. Yes, that was very successful, as far as I could see.
So that now takes you up to 30 operations?
That takes me up to 30. Then
and
a couple of days later, on June 1st, 2,000 bomber raid, the Wellington 1C to Essen. That was a flop.
Why was that?
Haze and smoke over the target. You couldn't see what was what. First round Cologne, of course, you've got the river there too. As I say, it's gin clear. As I can remember. But Essen, you just sort of bomb the powers and hope for the best.
And you're in your Wellington. What sort of height? You were at 12,000 feet in Hamdens. What sort of height?
About the same, make 10,000, 12,000, I think.
This is really quite low, isn't it?
It is compared to later on, certainly. The Armalank I used to bomb at 23.
Yes. Safer.
Yes. Just like you said, bombs dropped on you apart from anything else.
Was that, I mean, we can, let's touch on that now. Was that a real danger?
Oh, very much so. It's not only being a danger of being shot down by flak or fighters. The other big danger was collision. Because I collided with another Lank on the way to guard target on one occasion. I didn't have any bombs dropped on it, but I used to bomb from 23,000, which is about as high you would get the Lank. You see, in the early days of, was it 43, when this, all three of the Stirlings and the Halifaxes. Stirlings were underneath. Halifaxes were next. And the Lanks were on top, so the Stirlings used to get everything dropped on. Apart from anything else.
Not the aircraft to be flying.
No.
No.
Landed up on Stirlings at the end.
Well, we'll come on to that.
There's
another story, yes, which we'll come to. So Essen was a flop. 1st or 2nd of June, I think you said?
1st of June.
1st of June.
Wellington DV 608. Is that the number?
And it was an old Wellington 1C.
1C, yes.
And then you went back to instructing again.
Yes, it was normal instructing, but they started expanding the OTUs. And I, on the, where are we? 5th of August, I went up to help get 30 OTU at Hickson going.
So you were a sort of founder instructor,
yep.
If I can call it that.
Yep. That's near Stafford.
Now, you said you found the job quite boring, but they wouldn't have sent you to become a founder instructor if you hadn't been good at it. Would that be right? Oh. Correct assumption or not?
Possibly. Unless they might have wanted to get rid of me. I don't know. I don't know how they work things and postings. I don't think anybody does. Yes, 30 OTU to start off with the just getting going with the instructors, actually. The first course seems to have I think it was about a month after we started. Yes, local flying. There were some cross countries, yes, it must have been. I don't know.
That's cross countries with you sitting in the passenger seat with the novice flying?
No, P1. Pilot. Pilot in charge.
I'm sorry?
Pilot in charge, P1.
Then does that mean that you're in charge or
yeah,
the...
I'm in charge.
So the novice, the pilot under instruction is not flying the aircraft?
That's right. I might have been in the other side, on the right-hand seat, sort of supervising. It's possible, I can't remember.
And Wellington had dual controls, did it?
The OTU ones, yes. Yes, that's right.
And how long were you there for?
At Hickson until 20th of October 43.
You were there a very long time.
About a year, or just over the year now. So well, I was off 18 months, you see, altogether.
I was going to say, you've been instructing now 18 months.
Yeah, which is normal. That's what we expected.
Was it?
During that time, I was... Was it? The following spring, spring of 43, they reorganised the instructors so that instead of just staying with one flight, having its own group of instructors, they had what they call a conversion gang. That's a group of instructors who went round just doing the type conversion. So you gave the pilots under instruction dual instruction on how to fly the Wellington by day and by night. And then when they came to the operational type flying, they went out with the other pilots who were on the various flights. So we moved from the main station to the satellite station and operated, as I say, doing this, the basic training for the pupils.
And then other...
I was in charge of that.
And then you were in charge of that?
Yes. Partly, I think, because I'd been to CFS anyway.
And then other instructors did type conversions?
And we did type... our group did the type conversion. And the other pilots who were permanently on the flights, they did the operational type bombing instruction across countries and that sort of thing.
And many aircrew went on the Empire Air Training Scheme and went abroad to South Africa and Canada. So were these people that you were training, were they people who had come back from the Empire Air Training or had never gone?
I think they'd come back, actually. Yes, because some of them used to get lost. I mean, they went to the States. I mean, you do cross-country. You see a railway line, you see a town, that's it. You know where you are. You fly over England and the industrial smog and something, you see a railway line, might be anywhere.
Yes.
They got to get used to that sort of thing.
Which would be the same over Germany.
They had what they called AFUs, didn't they? Advanced Flying Units for people who've done the Empire Training Scheme. I think they used to have Oxford. And they used to do cross-countries and map reading just for a month or so, I think, something like that. As far as I can remember. But as a result of that, I then got promoted to squadron leader, like I had at Cypher, squadron leader, Frank One. That was in 43, June.
An acting squadron leader again?
Yes, June 43.
Now, when you're promoted to acting squadron leader, what happens to your acting flight lieutenancy rank? Does that get confirmed as a...
As far as I can remember, it's confirmed as a flight lieutenant acting squadron leader.
Otherwise, you could get bumped all the way back down to pilot officer and almost...
No, it would have been flying officer anyway. By then. No, I think I was flight lieutenant acting squadron leader, which I stayed at that rank for the duration.
More money to spend on classical records.
That's right.
Greater pay.
Now, one of the other things that an interesting person I met in the musical world is he was William Clark. Sir William Clark. He was at the time he was a musical correspondent on the Observer, and he later became he was in charge of BBC Radio 3 Music. He also helped to get the summer Dartington School of Music going.
Which is not far from here.
No.
Yes.
He was in on that. And he was, as I say, he was on the station. They used to do it. He was a flying controller up in the control tower.
What age would he have been then?
I suppose he seemed awfully old. He must have been in the 30s, actually. You see, he was a brilliant pianist himself, actually. I remember attending a concert in Eastbourne, actually, after the war, and he came down to service and played a Mozart concerto.
And he would have been RAFVR, wouldn't he?
Well, I think we all were, officially. I mean, as you see those photos, we got VR badges up.
Yes.
And then we removed them after a year or two. I can't remember how while they were in.
You were asked to remove them?
I think I can't remember how, why, they say how that happened, but so we did.
So, promoted to acting squadron leader in June of 43.
Yeah.
And you ceased instructing in October 43.
I left Hickson, yeah. Well, I was flight commander then, you see, and I just did what flying I felt like. I do remember one thing, I was entitled to a motorbike. I tried it once and never again. Better go around on a bike.
So
the other thing, when I do remember while I was there, I was they came round with a decompression chamber. They were looking for mosquito pilots. I remember having a go in that.
In the decompression chamber?
Yeah.
Why would you need a decompression chamber to be a mosquito pilot?
Well, sir, do you know what happened if oxygen went off? What to expect, that sort of thing.
But would that not apply to any aircraft we were in?
Well, we were on oxygen, but they reckon that we didn't go high enough, I don't think. I think they'd only brought them in sort of about 43 or something.
And flying mosquitoes didn't attract you, or what?
I was interested, yes. Otherwise, I wouldn't have gone in the decompression chamber.
And, you know, what I'm seeking is you did not fly mosquitoes. I think that's correct,
no.
Isn't it?
No.
And so my question then is, you did not fly mosquitoes because, apart from the fact you weren't picked, I mean, or why weren't you picked, or why did you not do it?
Well, I think it's just the way it went. Depends on their losses and why they need it, I think, more than anything else.
You know, this is something I find time and again, is that you try and pin down. One tries to try and establish order in this chaos as to why people are posted here or why they do that or something else. And there isn't any order at all. It's all entirely in the lap of the gods.
Oh, yeah, that's quite right.
And this never troubled you, that you were in a way at the beck and call of this vast machine that just...
Well, there was a war on.
Yes, but I've sometimes asked people, I've sometimes said to them, did you ever try and... guide, especially as a pilot, where you're quite a specialist trained person, did you try and guide your career within the RAF into this direction or into that direction? And everybody so far said pretty well no.
Yeah. Well, there's the old service business, you never volunteer, isn't it?
So you waited to present.
Yeah. That's one of the first things you learn when you join up. Don't volunteer.
So you were not sent for mosquitoes. Were you disappointed?
No. I got back on a squadron anyway, which is what I wanted. And we went up to... I went to the Bristol Area Indian School down here. That was just to learn... Because the Wellingtons... We went over from the Wellington 1C to the Wellington 3 and the 10, which both had Hercules engines, just to learn something about the Hercules engine.
So you rejoined which squadron in...
I left Hickson in as I say, of 20th of October 43. I went to heavy conversion unit, 1662 HCU, at Blyton, B-L-Y-T-O-N, on the 21st of October until the 9th of November 43.
A very short period on heavy conversion.
Yes. We were held up too by bad weather. I see in one of the letters I wrote home complaining about the fog and industrial smog and things, we hadn't flown for a week or so yet. I found the length was very pleasant airplane to fly. Picked up a cruiser. And then I was posted to 100th Squadron Grimsby.
And how many of your crew had flown before, operationally?
None of them.
So you were the only one?
Yeah. Yes, now we get to the, while we're talking about crews, you see, a normal tour was 30 trips, first tour. Second and any subsequent tour was 20 trips. So you might stay with the crew, say, to your 20, and then you've got to leave them behind on the squadron.
Which, of course, you did.
Which I did. And as flight commander, I also did. I took one or two other crews, including this one here, who Banks was on. I took the whole crew on the trip, on their first trip.
Now, this is Bill Banks, who has, who we have...
I took them on their first trip to Schweinfurt.
Yes, who I've interviewed before. And we have Flight Lieutenant Dickey, who unfortunately was lost.
I vaguely remember him having looked at the picture.
Bill Banks.
Yes, I don't know any of the others.
You don't?
No, he was lost too.
And then the rear gunner,
yeah.
Price, was lost. Yes. That would have been in April 1944.
April the 9th, Gdynia. Because I was on that raid.
Oh, were you?
That was my last trip on the with 100
ish. Oh well, we'll come to that. So you joined 100 Squadron.
Yes.
sometime in November 43.
That's right. 10th of November.
Now, one thing, Hugh, I'd like to ask you is this: when you did your first tour, the losses were, how shall I put it, acceptable. Or at least they weren't as severe as they...
didn't seem to worry about it. Of course, one, you had to harden your heart anyway. Otherwise, you wouldn't survive.
But the point I'm going to make is that everyone knows now what the loss rate is during what, for Bomber Command, was this extraordinary and terrible year from the middle of... well, from the early spring of 43 to the Nuremberg raid, really.
Yeah.
And so everyone knew what the losses were like there, yet despite that you were keen and anxious to rejoin an operational squadron.
Yes. I wanted to get back on the squadron. Mind you, when I did get back on the 100th Squadron, I was very disappointed in the atmosphere. There's nothing like as good as it used to be on 50. In fact, I comment on the first letter I wrote home. I thought it was very poor.
What do you think contributed to that?
Probably I expected too much to begin with. And I'd known what life had been like. I think probably we're getting a bit weary, war weary part of it. And when I got there eventually, my intention was to try and get through as quickly as I could. But being flight commander, I couldn't go out every night.
But despite the loss rate, you were, which was now quite appreciable, you were still keen to get back on the squadron.
Yeah. I was getting bored with the OTU. Frustrated, I wanted to do something. And then another thing, sort of looking ahead, but Bomber Command kept you for 2 tours and your appropriate rest, then they would consider letting you go to another command. And this is now going ahead a bit to 44. I want to get on Transport Command. I did get on Transport Command, but I ended up in 38 Group, not flying Yorkshire out to the Middle East or something. Ended up on Stirling's towing gliders, and that's all transport support work.
Which is how you finished on Stirling's course.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, we'll come to that.
After Armour.
After, yeah. Yeah, we'll come to that.
That was a replacement from what one of the crews lost at Armour.
So you've joined 100. You're a flight commander. You're quite a senior board. But it's not, you're disappointed with having, with what you've found when you've got there.
Mm.
And you can't fly every night. Can you give me an indication of what it, of, can you describe your life on the squadron, if you can, please, in those first weeks up to Christmas?
Well, to begin with, the squadron was being split at the time, because they were taking one of the flights, Form 550 at North Killingholm. And I actually was sort of attached myself to A flight. A flight was flight commander was Breakspear. And I was flying A flight aircraft. Went out as much as I could. I see first four I got in front of me here. A Berlin. The first one landed short of fuel at Boxton.
So your very first operation with 100, you ran out of fuel and had to land somewhere else?
Ran short of fuel.
Ran short of fuel.
Yeah. We thought it'd be better to land rather than try and press on and come to grief or something. Anyway. The next to Berlin, three. In front of me, the next three Berlins, four of them.
What
on
was
one of those?
Yes.
We were going direct on the direct flight, and somewhere just south of Bremen, we were got coned by searchlights. And while we were trying, I buried my head in the cockpit so not to get blinded. While we were manoeuvring to get out of searchlights, something hit the front windscreen and hit me in the chest. No damage done. Which either the parachute
except,
harness or the aircraft
except
harness
the safe. Windscreen.
Yes, just a small hole in the windscreen.
So that might have been a piece of shrapnel or?
Might have been a piece of shrapnel, yes.
But you never found it. It obviously.
I seem to remember asking the ground crew. Let me have it if they found anything. Nothing materialised anyway.
How do you get out of being coned by searchlights? What is the manoeuvre you would perform?
Well, you just have to. You've heard of the corkscrew. You know the corkscrew.
Yes.
You just have to do a very big corkscrew as best you can. If there's flak. If the flak stops, it means the night fighters arrive, usually. I think see reports about German night fighters. Most pilots used to do a diving turn to the left, which I did, I think, to start the corkscrew going. Well, you're sitting on the left-hand side anyway, it's natural.
Hmm. A diving turn to the left, and then you corkscrew and you try and...
Climbing turn to the right, and so on. Turn around again. Literally a corkscrew. Standard manoeuvre.
And you would perform this manoeuvre for how long?
As long as necessary.
So you could perform it... So if you were passed from searchlight to searchlight, you could do it for a very long time?
Mm. Well, once they got cone, when they got out of range... You were in the clear as far as that was concerned.
And that happened on one of your Berlin trips?
One of them. I think it was the third one, actually, 23rd. The second one, of course, is the refers to that, November the 22nd.
Yes. But we'll come on to that in just a moment. I just want to ask you this question, Hugh. Berlin was one of the most difficult targets to do, most heavily defended in the furthest distance.
Yeah.
There must have been an enormous shock for you, having been flying in relatively, how should I put it, relatively safe skies in your first tour. And now I know you had two trips, Essen and Cologne, and now you're back, and you do these six trips, I think, in quick succession to the worst place in Europe.
Well, it wasn't as bad as going to the Ruhr.
Was it not?
In summer. Apart from the length. I mean, the hardest part was the length. But the defences were far more concentrated during what was known as the Battle of the Ruhr in 43. The reports I heard from everybody.
Because you only went once. No, you didn't go at all, did you, in 43? 42, you went to Essen once.
Yeah. 42 was the 1,000 bomber raids.
Yes.
But most, you see, in the summer months, they could bring all the defences in. And in the winter...